I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Chorley. Please don't ambush me with a cake. Coming up on today's episode of the podcast, I don't know if there's much going on. It's just a little bit of PMQs. Just Keir Starmer, Boris Johnson having a lovely little chat. Tim Shipman and I pause the action to explain what on earth is going on. All that in just a moment. After we kick off, as ever, with our columnist panel, it's Wednesday, so it must be Alibert, it's Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton. Let's talk about your column today, Alice, because it is extraordinary. And some slight shift in tone here, but you've written really personally about your experience when your mother was in a care home and you couldn't go and see her, and you abided by all the rules. And your story, and I know it's a story that's replicated again and again and again, that's why people are so cross.
So that's my problem. I keep wanting to move on to Ukraine and, you know, the cost of living crisis. But actually, all I can keep thinking of is, why on earth did I let my mother stay in her care home? We couldn't see her for a year. She'd had an illness. She'd had to go into the care home just before lockdown. And so she was too ill, really, to come out. She was too ill to be on her own. She was too ill to be with us because she needed nursing care. But at the same time, we never went in to see her because we weren't allowed to. We ended up seeing her in the garden, as everyone else did, and we were shielded. We couldn't touch her at all. She had no touch, really, at all for a year. And I remember my children at one stage, the two youngest ones, crawling round on the outside of the care home and waving at her through the window. And then they got shouted at by one of the care home nurses. And you can see what happened is people were really terrified of breaking the rules. And the problem is now, every time you look at Boris Johnson breaking another of them or looking as though he has, or them partying, I don't mind that as much. So I keep thinking, what was I doing? Why didn't I just get her out? Why didn't I go and see her? Why didn't I go and share cake with her? And that's the problem. It just haunts you. And you want to move on. And I think most of the country want to move on. But we just come back to God. We were made total fools of. We followed these rules.
Sorry.
Without thinking.
To be fair, the reason you did was because you knew it was the right thing. You were doing the right thing. And I completely take your point. And everyone feels this. Everyone's got people they didn't see, things they didn't go to, life events that they missed. But that was because you were doing the right thing and they weren't. That's the key thing to remember.
But I now think maybe I wasn't. Now you think, why were you doing it? Because she really was so lonely on her own. And actually, she didn't die of COVID in the end. I think in the end, she gave up. So you're thinking, why did I make that choice? And that's the problem, is everyone's making those sort of choices. Yeah. You know, right at the beginning, the child who died on their own in the hospital. I mean, we're now looking back and thinking, what were we doing? But you realise that Downing Street, I mean, but they just didn't know those stories, probably. They were so out of touch, they didn't realise quite what everyone else was giving up,
I think. That's the thing, isn't it, Robin? I've talked about this a few times. The big sense you get is they just weren't experiencing lockdown in the way that we were.
No, they thought it was for other people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of extraordinary, but that is the only conclusion you can draw.
Yeah.
I mean, and which is why, I mean, this is the absolute opposite of a Westminster bubble story. You still hear that occasionally, it's just nice. I mean, because this applied to everybody, except it didn't. It didn't apply to the people who weren't supposedly applying it. Alice, can I just ask you, could you have gone about bending the rules if you hadn't been so conscientious? How would you have gone about doing that? What did you want to do that you didn't
do?
We
convinced them to let my parents meet each other from two different cairns right. when they shouldn't have, because we felt that after 9 months it was just too much.
Yeah, so that's, you described that as the one that they wanted.
So that was their one meeting. But I think probably there wasn't that much we could do because it would have become a police matter, but maybe we should have let it become a police matter. I mean, that's what you don't know looking back, do you?
Yeah, I mean, I remember going to my uncle's funeral and we're all socially distanced in the church and my cousin, and thinking, should I give my cousin a little pat on the back? I was sitting behind the pew behind him when the eulogy was talking about his dad, and I didn't. And I mean, it's a terribly small thing compared to Alice's story, but you know, I could have done, couldn't I? Yeah. And it wouldn't have made much difference.
Although the vicar would have felt. See, that's the problem.
Tell us about the vicar and your conflict.
The problem is that then you realise it's not just you, it's all the people who had to make these rules. So there are some really petty officials who really obviously just
We had them in our local park, people going throwing their weight around in the
park. Absolutely loved it. But there were quite a lot of people. So the people in various care homes that I've talked to over the last year, they really hated being prison wardens. That's what they felt they'd become. And then the vicar, I've had several vicars, and you know, our local vicar who said he couldn't quite understand what they ended up doing.
Yeah.
Because they felt that, you know, they were now policing these terrible rules and making people do things that, in retrospect, looked absolutely dreadful. I'm sure the same happens in hospitals when they couldn't let people come.
But I suppose that's why we didn't do them. I mean, is because we didn't want to embarrass other people. It's the nature. Yeah. It's the nature of a social sanction, isn't it? And we all adhere to them, and that's kind of society. But when you've got the people running society who just aren't bothered...
Yeah.
It's just every day there. I mean, I've lost track of how many parties they were having. Apart from anything else, even at a time when you weren't allowed to have parties, you shouldn't be having that many parties at work.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Even if it had been perfectly normal times, the workplace shouldn't be that kind of.
And also now we have to have the police case going on and on and on, no one really gets closure at all, do we? For months now. It's not just Boris Johnson, the rest of us are all waiting.
But I suppose the thing about the parties, because people were tweeting me about this yesterday, saying there is a world where Boris walks into the cabinet room, is presented with a cake, and he says, "This is very nice, but obviously we're not allowed to do this. Go back to your desks."
Yeah.
And that is clearly not what happened either. And so, you know, what we don't know is all the other minor transgressions. You know, it's only the people, you know, Dominic Cummings and others who are now putting this stuff into the public domain. But just this general sense of the rules that everyone else is following not being followed is why... and I suppose
we did that all the time.
Because we felt we were in a sort of war, almost like a wartime situation. Everyone was doing their bit. And then with hindsight, we sort of can't... there's only when sometimes you go back to your phone and that sort of thing, you realise it was mad, wasn't it? It was completely mad.
Yeah, and this is May 2020. Yeah, it's absolute height of it. We're all clapping for the NHS every Thursday night. And although it's really tough and the death toll is rising, there is a sense of shared community. People are, in some way, they're kind of enjoying that solidarity. Yeah. We weren't all in it together, were we? I mean, the people who thought they could do it in private...
Yeah.
We're doing it.
I was thinking about the drone. Do you remember the drones chasing people up Dartmoor or
Derbyshire? Two women who met up for a coffee and
talking about the funerals. One of the most awful things I remember seeing during that period was the streamed funeral where someone moved a chair to sit next to someone and was some official comes and moves them back.
And then Boris Johnson, it was literally just his 56th birthday. I mean,
exactly.
Most of us are at work during our sort of, you know. It sort of blurs into one, doesn't it, in your 50s? Because it's not a big deal, your 56th birthday.
Really
the fact they'd already had one cake in the morning.
No, this is second cake.
I haven't yet got to 56, but I'm not going to
be expecting a huge cake.
We're going to ambush you with a cake.
Yeah. I got to 56 summer before last, and it really wasn't a big deal. I got a cake.
Did you get two, though? Because Boris got
No, and I think I probably had to beg
Did you gather 30 of your closest colleagues, your wife and your interior designer, together?
No, I didn't. No. When was it? 20. Yeah, I mean, but I'm the same age as Boris. What am I talking about? Yeah, of course. He's 6 weeks older than me, and it was that summer. And
he can't even remember.
In fact, we remember we talked about it.
Yeah,
and we didn't do it.
Yeah. But it is all the details that we love. So we love the interior design. We love that. That's the problem, is bits of it. You're waiting for Petronella to wire to come back in, or yeah. Jennifer Courage. You want all the themes to be tied up at the
it
end.
Turns
but at
out
the
Jennifer
time,
Garcioli was in the cake. That exactly. would be the perfect outcome.
Well, she would look great coming out of a cake.
She's the Carol Kaplan, isn't she? Of this Lulu Little is Carol Kaplan, isn't she?
Which brings us on nicely to being interviewed by the police.
Which I'd totally forgotten about.
Because Patrick McGuire, I mean, talk about some of my colleagues in sort of political Twitter have very short memories. Mm. This is unprecedented, isn't it? This has never happened before. And actually, you know, in the dying days of Tony Blair's government, he was interviewed twice, I think.
Three times. As a witness, not under
caution. But not under caution. All to do with cash for peerages.
Yeah.
But the issue is we've now forgotten that, haven't we? So it shows that some police cases we will forget, but I think that's because we'll remember Tony Blair about Iraq, whether you think that was a good idea or not. Whereas with, you know, Boris Johnson, whatever happens, we are going to remember the cake, aren't we?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's been immortalised.
But it's amazing how, I mean, we'll forget the cake because there'll be something else. Because you'd have thought we were always going to remember the suitcase full of wine.
Oh, the cheese board.
Or the cheese board.
Yeah. But now it's a cake.
Yeah, and now it's a cake. But the Tony...
He's a greedy bugger, isn't he? Sorry.
But the Tony Blair thing is interesting. And Patrick McGuire's written a really good piece of the Times today where he... You know, he says, ultimately, was this the thing that brought down Tony Blair?
No.
But, and he quotes the famous Jeremy Thorpe quote about when he was asked, do you think your murder trial contributed to your failure to get re-elected?
Yeah.
And he said, I don't think it helped.
Yeah.
And this clearly didn't help Tony Blair. And it's probably not helping Boris Johnson, is it? I mean, there was a very peculiar, clever by half attempt yesterday to suggest that actually the police being called in...
Kicks it down the road.
It might help Boris Johnson.
Yeah. I don't think it's ever a good look to have have the boys and girls in blue coming and knocking on the door.
Yeah, if you look at most of the front page today, Johnson faces police interview over parties.
Son.
Numbers up PM.
Hello, 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 Bojo.
Plonker. Yeah, hello, 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 Bojo. PM in peril is police called in. That's not a good look.
No, and
but the weird thing is the police were in there already. That's what's so extraordinary about this whole scenario.
Yeah, and they didn't say anything.
They didn't say anything.
Well, that was the thing. At the beginning of the week, we had the Telegraph reporting that the police had handed over loads of information to Sue Gray about who was there and, you know, timings and suitcases and whatnot. Yeah. And now the police are basically investigating themselves.
It wouldn't surprise us, would it, if there were a couple of policemen at the party? You know, because they're all getting, maybe off duty or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I wonder if the official photographers were there as well, because they obviously didn't think they were doing anything wrong. There may be some photos that have come from them.
Mm. Yeah.
But there's a suggestion of photos.
There is a suggestion of photos.
With bottles of wine and things.
Yeah. No, it's not a good look. I mean, especially Conservative Party law. I mean, how do they talk about law and order, you know? I mean, the Conservative Party out there in the country, your average Conservative activist who's worried about crime and all the rest of it, does not want to see their Prime Minister being interviewed by the police.
Yeah.
And we had a neighbour.
That's why. Here's an interesting thing. Do you think the Daily Mail have got this right? A nation that's lost all sense of proportion. Surely Daily Mail readers.
No,
I think actually they've got that wrong in the sense that we're desperate to move on.
I think it's terrible.
No, because actually what happens is you have to lead from the top. And if Boris Johnson's got the police coming in, if no one's sure whether he's flagrantly disobeyed all the rules that he himself set, then that sets a terrible precedent.
And it's lying. People don't like lying. 8%, only 8% of the country believe his explanation or what he says. Yeah. So 92% of the country think the Prime Minister's a liar. That's really serious.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's not out of proportion. I mean, you might say the offence is, maybe. I wouldn't. But
it's not about the cake.
Danny's column's
very good on this. Yeah. It's not about the cake. It's about
accountability.
And accountability.
Accountability, yeah. Being a grown-up, having some respect for the people that you're in charge of.
Yeah, yeah. And Boris Johnson was very good on Ukraine yesterday. I mean, he's good sometimes at the really big set pieces, but that's not enough because actually now once you lose that sense of trust, everything else is coloured, isn't it, by that?
And also it's very hard for him to play the grand statesman on Ukraine when the entire country is laughing about a cake.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
And look at Blair. I mean, Blair hasn't recovered from Iraq just because the country thinks he lied about it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what people were still saying about it.
And you've now reached the point where I've now got people sending me back my tweets that have been appearing in their friendship WhatsApp groups. You know, this is everybody's talking about this. This is everyone's talking. So go on then. Let's cards on the table. Will you have resigned this time next week when you're here?
He won't have resigned. No, he won't have resigned. Whether he'll have been forced out, whether there'll have been, no confidence vote or whether somebody, one of the contenders, has put themselves forward and it starts to get serious in that way. That's maybe the case. But no, absolutely 100% he won't have resigned.
He's going to have to be forced out. That's the problem, isn't it? That we know that he knows how to play this game, that if everyone else has a sense of shame at some point. But I just don't think he does he? No. I mean, it could be literally. He could, you know, he could be in jail and still, you know.
I mean, he looks very cross and unhappy, but he just looks like self-pity, doesn't it? It's somebody who's very unhappy that they've been caught.
Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton there, and of course you can read them in The Times every week. Just get yourself a digital subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/timeshedbox. Up next is PMQ's Unpacked.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
You're listening to the Redbox Podcast now. It's time for this.
PMQs Unpacked on Times Radio. Unpacking the politics and cutting through the crossfire.
Order, order. I call Matt Chorley and Tim Shipman.
Here we are again then. It's the most important PMQs since the one last week and the one before that. Tim Shipman is here, Chief Political Commentator for the Sunday Times. What's going to happen, Tim?
Oh, I don't know, Matt. It's going to be very exciting.
Don't say that.
It's
you're like in the lobby. You're a political commentator.
It's like a prize fight, isn't it?
You should know everything.
Well, the first thing is that Boris Johnson has not listened to David Davis, so we will be there this week. He has not gone. And we know that he's sort of limbering up for a difficult session because he's been jogging this morning. We saw him out in the dark with the dog.
Is that a sign of something?
Well, it's like sort of Rocky training, isn't it, for this, you know, you expect... I imagine he goes along in his head, you know, with rousing tunes in his head, preparing to talk about Captain Hindsight or something as he tries to riposte what will doubtless be some pretty tricky questions.
And if you're Keir Starmer, do you just talk about parties and cake and so on and risk wait for Sue Gray... just for the whole six questions? Or do you talk about Ukraine, cost of living, gas prices, national insurance, and all the other stuff, which actually is upsetting Tory MPs as well, and show that you're slightly rising above it all?
I think he will probably not do all six on it, because, frankly, we don't know a great deal more than we did last week. We've now had the birthday party, so I would think the birthday party is good for us. Well, you need a serious question about the police, you need some kind of question about the birthday party, and some kind of joke about cake and whether Boris Johnson still believes in having it and eating it, or whether he now believes in, I didn't know anything about it.
He was ambushed
with a cake. So there's a lot of fun to be had with some of the more ridiculous things that the Johnsonians have been saying over the last 48 hours. And if Rishi Sunak pipes up next to him, I dare say there's a couple of jokes to be about how Sunak had gone for a serious meeting and accidentally found himself in the midst of this cake chaos.
He stumbled across Boris Johnson's cake ambush. We're just waiting for PMQs to start. They're just winding up the previous question session. Online, if you're watching on YouTube, hello to Hugh in Portugal, Tim in Sweden. Where else are you watching in from? Melbourne. Hello, Declan. Theo's in Cambridge. Jack's in Switzerland. Somebody's in the West Midlands. Ginny's in Birmingham. San is in Japan. So go online. Let us know where you're watching and what you expect to happen. Because I think it is a tricky one for Keir Starmer.
But there's so much going on in Ukraine. I think he will probably want to talk about that as well. And, you know, there are some people with suspicions that Britain's response has been particularly robust, perhaps to give Boris Johnson something else to talk about. So it'd be interesting to see if Starmer takes that approach.
Just going into this, what, from the people you're speaking to, what is the mood amongst Tory MPs?
I think they're sort of... they're slightly becalmed, but they're also getting a bit sick of this and the relentlessness with which yet another story emerges. And Dominic Cummings was very open on his blog earlier this week, in which he said more of this stuff is going to keep coming, and don't think that the Sue Gray report will be the end of it, because there'll be some people who won't have wanted to talk to Sue Gray or provide her with photographs or whatever, because the Prime Minister might find out who's been doing the dirty on him. The police investigation makes that a slightly different creature now, because people are much more likely to cooperate with the police, I would have thought. But, yeah, they're sort of waiting for this report, not quite knowing what to expect. There's been so much briefing, a lot of it ill-informed, that it's going to be great or it's going to be disastrous. And people now just want to see what it says in black and white and begin to make their own minds up.
It's interesting, looking at the pictures from the House of Commons, you've got Brandon Lewis sitting directly next to the Prime Minister, because I think he's just been doing Northern Ireland questions. And on his other side, there's Liz Truss, who is out sort of defending him this morning. Then Priti Patel, and then Rishi Sunak, which unfortunately for Rishi Sunak means he's just out of shot on the main shot, because he was a bit prominent last week.
Yes, whether he wants to be seen sitting next to him or not is a slightly moot point. There's quite a lot of Union Jack face coverings on the Conservative benches as well.
Well, I assume it because last week Christian Wakeford, having crossed the floor, was wearing one. So maybe they're trying to take back the flag. Liz Truss and Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak, are they manoeuvring behind the scenes?
Well, they're trying not to, but lots of people who like them are trying to sort of position them and start to make the argument about why they're the best person for the job, should the job become available, whilst the principals, Truss has done a slightly better job than Sunak of appearing to be publicly loyal, though I think a lot of people think that that's that their actual loyalty is fairly similar, which is that it's slightly conditional now.
Asking online what Keir Starmer should actually do, Robert says sing happy birthday. Diana says, offer Johnson some cake and say, how about you eat this while I run the country? Catch COVID again, says Dave. And Stephen says, ask Angela Rayner to stand in. She's much more effective. Well, you can watch along right now. We're crawling towards 1,000 people online. Go to your YouTube, search Times Radio, so you can see Tim and I as we watch along the live House of Commons feed. It's Mary says, PMQs is almost as addictive as Wordle. Juanita's watching from Froome, looking forward to Tim's impressions. You've got, because obviously Patrick McGuire has perfected the Lindsay Hoyle impression, so maybe you can do, if you could rustle up a Keir Starmer impression before the half hour's out,
that'd
be lovely.
Slightly trickier one, isn't it?
Here we go then. This is PMQ's Unpacked. You're listening on Times Radio, you're watching on Times Radio's YouTube channel. Let's go to the House of Commons. This is Keir Starmer.
Leader of the Opposition, Keir Starmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and can I join with the Prime Minister in his comments in relation to Bloody Sunday? The Ministerial Code says that ministers who knowingly mislead Parliament will be expected to offer their resignation. Does the Prime Minister believe that applies to him?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, of course, but let me tell the House that I think he's inviting a question about an investigation which, as you know, Mr. Speaker, I can't comment, and on which he is, as a lawyer, Mr. Speaker, will know that I can't comment on. And what I am focused on is delivering the fastest recovery of any European European economy from COVID. The fastest booster rollout, 400,000 more people on the payrolls now than there were before the pandemic began. And we're launching a policy tomorrow, Mr. Speaker. He talks about people being out of work. In my case, that's what he... I understand why he wants it. We're launching a plan tomorrow, Mr. Speaker, to get 500,000 people off welfare into work. It's a fantastic idea. I hope he supports it.
Well, let's just jump in there then. So we should explain that the idea of misleading Parliament is seen traditionally as a very serious matter.
Yes, I mean, one of Boris Johnson's chaps was out this morning saying, "Well, he hasn't robbed a bank, but lying to Parliament, misleading Parliament when you don't correct it, is seen as, you know, frankly, as a more mortal sin than robbing a bank in Parliament."
Used to be a resigning offence.
It did. Though more recently, what seems to have happened is that people go to the dispatch box to correct their error.
Yeah.
Boris Johnson has clearly has a degree of confidence that whatever Sue Gray says, she ain't going to be saying that he misled Parliament. And interestingly, I was wondering whether we'd get some obfuscation there, an avoidance of the question. Actually, we didn't. We got a straight answer from Boris Johnson, which is that if I'm found to have misled Parliament, I will resign, which can only mean that he thinks he didn't mislead Parliament.
Although he did say I've been assured there were no parties.
That is very true. Perhaps, but that may be true.
He could have been assured while forgetting about some of them.
I think reading between the lines of all the conversations one's had over the last few weeks, it is very clear that in number 10 they decided that they had not broken the rules and that is what they told Prime Minister. The fact that that was palpable nonsense doesn't seem to have changed that line.
Boris Johnson then just sort of preempted a whole load of things that Keir Starmer hadn't done. So I'm not going to comment on the ongoing investigation. Then the fast economic recovery, the booster programme and so on. And then, out of nowhere...
Well, get bored of that yet, because you'll be hearing that again.
But then he just announces a policy, which has got nothing to do with the question, to get 500,000 people back into work. And he almost made a joke about his own imminent unemployment, I thought.
Sort of, yes.
We'll see.
I think Boris Johnson likes living on the edge.
If I was him, I might have kept my 500,000 people out of work policy up my sleeve for maybe...
Maybe question five.
Well, let's see how we get on then. Let's go back. This is question number two, Keir Starmer.
I think the Prime Minister said yes, he agrees the code does apply to him. Yes. And therefore, if he misled Parliament, he must resign.
Yes.
On the 1st of December, the Prime Minister told this House, in relation to parties during lockdown, all guidance was followed completely in number 10 from that dispatch box.
Yeah.
On the 8th of December, looks quizzical, he said it. On the 8th of December, the Prime Minister told this House, I have been repeatedly assured since these allegations emerged there was no party. So since he acknowledges the ministerial code applies to him, will he now resign?
Yes.
No, Mr Speaker. But, you know, since he asks about COVID restrictions... let me just remind the House, and indeed remind the country, that he has been relentlessly opportunistic throughout. He has flip-flopped from one side to the other. He would have kept us in lockdown in the summer, Mr. Speaker. He would have taken us back into lockdown at Christmas, Mr. Speaker. And it's precisely because we didn't listen to Captain Hindsight that we have the fastest growing economy in the G7, Mr. Speaker. And we have got all the big calls right.
OK, let's jump in there. Keir Starmer repeating. I mean, obviously, it was a big deal 2 weeks ago when Keir Starmer called for him to resign. It's now a sort of par for the course. And then we just got Boris Johnson's greatest hits. We'd still be in lockdown now if it... I mean, strictly speaking, the Labour Party didn't call for a lockdown at Christmas. They did, you know, they weren't happy last summer, but it is just a fact that they did not call for a lockdown at Christmas.
No, that's true. Though I suspect Boris Johnson has a point. If they didn't want to come out of it in the summer, then would they have got out of it by Christmas? Who knows? But this is, you know, the argument that he and his whips and his other supporters are making to MPs. Look, this bloke did the vaccines. He got us through the big crisis. He got the big calls right. And that is their argument. And they're going to stick to it. I think a lot of the public has moved past that argument. And a considerable number of Conservative MPs have as well. But it's what Boris Johnson's got. And it's interesting to me that Starmer could only find two examples that he wanted to hang his hat on of Boris Johnson misleading the Commons. And one of those we'd sort of already dealt with, which was that, you know, he had been told that there were no parties. Now, it's pretty obvious, I think, to a lot of people that Boris Johnson might have worked that out for himself, that they were having parties, particularly the ones that he attended.
But I was assured.
But was he assured by his staff that these were not parties but were work events? That is still their argument now. So in a sense, he does not accept that he misled the Commons. That's the line he's sticking to.
What I was told. It turns out it's more cleverly worded than perhaps we thought. Now more than 1,000 people watching along on YouTube. J.W. Andrews says, anyone else muting Johnson's reply? Just listen to Tim and Matt's analysis after. That's very nice. Terry says, may well have watched last week's PMQs. These two clowns again throwing cream cakes at each other. Very good. A broken record, says someone else.
Is that them or us?
I'm not sure. That's a good point.
I wasn't here last week.
You weren't here last week. Last week. And people pointing out we haven't yet had the European Medicines Agency or vacillate while we vaccinate.
Oh, so stand by.
Brace yourselves.
Get your bell ready.
Let's go back to the House of Commons. It's Keir Starmer, question three.
The guy that said in hindsight he now appreciates it was a party. We've discovered the real Captain Hindsight, haven't we, Mr. Speaker?
We're in a party yet.
Let me spell out. They shout now. They're going to have to go out and defend some of this nonsense. Let me spell out the significance of yesterday's developments. Sue Gray reported a matter to the police, having found evidence of behaviour that's potentially a criminal offence. Prime Minister, if you do not understand the significance of what happened yesterday, then I really do despair. Because the police, having... Prime Minister, the police, having got that material from Sue Gray, subject it to a test to decide whether to investigate. And that test was whether it was the most serious and flagrant type of breach in the rules. The police spelt out that what they meant by that, that those involved knew or ought to have known what they were doing was an offence, and that there was little ambiguity about the absence of any reasonable footage. Does the Prime Minister...
This question will continue, and I will hear... I will hear the question. Unfortunately, you might not believe this, but our constituents are very interested in both the questions and the answers. If some members do not wish to hear it, please leave quietly. Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, having got the material from Sue Gray, the police had to take a decision as to whether what they had before them was the most serious and flagrant types of breach of the rules. If members want to laugh at that, laugh. The police spelt out what they meant. They decided on the material they've already got, that those involved knew or ought to have known what they were doing was an offence, and that there was little ambiguity around the absence of any reasonable defence. Does the Prime Minister really not understand the damage his behaviour is doing to our country?
I mean, it didn't help Lindsay Hoyle jumping in there, Tim Shipman, but that was a bit of a muddle, wasn't it?
It was a bit of a muddle, but there actually, I thought, in its way, some quite good Starmer material there. I mean, you saw last week that he was deploying humour to effect, and he's turned the Captain Hindsight gag around and saying, you know, this fella's now got hindsight and realised he was at a party. And then back to old-style Starmer, the sort of slightly disapproving and a little bit disappointed with the Prime Minister. I'm a very serious lawyer. And very serious things
have been happening. I know how the legal law works.
I know how the legal judgy law works, and you appear not to. And he's got a point, you know. I mean, the police did say it was serious or flagrant breaches. And it's odd, this atmosphere on the Conservative benches, where there's a slight air of sort of, oh, we're all a bit bored of this now. All these, oh, what, another party and a cake as well. Oh, goodness me. But, you know, the police are involved. Clearly, some people are going to be found to have breached things. You know, whatever they say about the Prime Minister, it's all fairly unedifying. You know, but Starmer, you know, turning on his kind of best disappointed act, you know, damaging the country and all that sort of thing. But there is a sort of slight air of levity on the Tory benches. And Boris Johnson has been, you know, it's sort of, I wouldn't... To say smirk would be to put rather more sort of moral strength on. But there's some slight sort of nervous giggling and all the rest of it. It's not kind of, it's not the grave affair.
It's not a man humbled by the fact the police are now investigating.
That is true.
No. Doing. Yeah, yeah. I confess, I've forgotten already what Keir Starmer's question was. But let's go. I suspect it won't make any difference anyway because this is Boris Johnson's answer.
Mr. Speaker, I hope that the Right Honourable Gentleman understands that although the issue that he raises is important, there is simply no way, as he knows, as a lawyer, that I can comment on the investigation that he is currently taking place. But what he also knows, he talks about the most serious issue. He talks about the most serious issue before the public today and before the world today. It's almost as though he was in ignorance of the fact, Mr. Speaker, that we have a crisis on the borders of Ukraine, and I can tell him what is going on in the cabinet room of this country is that the UK government, no, Mr. Speaker,
lots of MPs shouting parties,
is bringing the West together so that we have, led by this government and this Prime Prime Minister and our Foreign Secretary and Defence Secretary to bring the West together to have the toughest possible package of sanctions to deter President Putin from what I think would be a reckless and a catastrophic invasion. That is what this government is doing. We're getting on with the job, and I think he needs to raise his game, frankly.
Well, there we are. Boris Johnson telling Keir Starmer to raise his game. Let us know who you think is performing better. If you go on to the Times Radio YouTube channel, you can watch along live. We've got a poll asking who is performing better, Keir Starmer or Boris Johnson. Let's go back then. Question number four, Keir Starmer.
Can I just say, honestly...
or Lindsay Hoyle.
Can I just say to both sides... Our constituent watching it, tensions are running high, and what we need to be able to do is allow the people out there who are bothered about their futures to hear what is said on both sides. So please, let's give the respect our constituents deserve. Keir Starmer.
Mr Speaker, this was the Prime Minister who went into hiding for 5 days because of these allegations. Talk to me about being around for the allegations. Mr Speaker...
Can I just say, I don't want to do this, but I am determined to make sure our constituents can hear. The next person that stops me hearing will not be continuing in this debate. Questions?
Mr Speaker, the Prime Minister's continual defences wait for the Sue Gray report. On the 8th of December, he told this House, I will place a copy of the report in the library of the House of Commons. His spokesperson has repeatedly stated that means the full report, not parts of the report, not a summary of the report, not an edited copy. So can the Prime Minister confirm that he will publish the full Sue Gray report as he receives it?
Minister.
Mr Speaker, what I can tell him is that we've got to leave the report to the independent investigator, as he knows. And of course, when I receive it, I will do exactly what I said. But I can tell him that in the meantime, I think what the people of this country want to hear is what we're doing to tackle the issues that matter to all of us. Fixing the cost of living, Mr. Speaker, helping people across the country by lifting the living wage, Mr. Speaker, by helping people with their fuel costs, Mr. Speaker, as this government is, and by cutting the tax of people on universal credit, cutting the tax by £1,000. And, Mr. Speaker, that party opposite are committed to abolishing universal credit. That's their policy.
Keir Starmer.
Let's just jump in there, Tim Shipman. Given the cost of living crisis and the fact there's a big cabinet row about putting up national insurance, there does seem to be quite an interesting argument. Say, let's stop talking about parties. Let's talk about how we're making everyone worse off instead.
Yeah, and it's interesting that Johnson has gone there before Starmer. He went there first on Ukraine. He went there first on cost of living. I mean, that doesn't mean he won't repeat the same answers if he is asked about it. But though, you know, we've had four questions on this now, and Labour do want it on the record that the report's going to be published in full. They sort of got that. Not stated explicitly, but they got Johnson to agree that, you know, he would stick by what he'd said. So, you know, he's got two questions left. Let's see if he can perform the pivot we think he should perform.
There we are. Like you said, you could still be watching a lot. We've got two on the who is performing better. 76% say Keir Starmer, 24% say Boris Johnson. And Damien says, first time I've ever watched Times Radio. Great show, Matt. I have to say, I'm disappointed with how glossy and polished the studio is. I was hoping for a Harry Potter style broom cupboard. Yeah. There we are. Right, we go back. Question number five from Keir Starmer.
Cutting the tax. The police say the evidence meets the test. Frankly, the public have made up their minds. They know he's not fit for the job. And that's what really matters here. Throughout this scandal, the Tories have done immense damage to public trust. When the leader of the Scottish Conservatives said the Prime Minister should resign, the leader of the House called him a lightweight. English Conservatives publicly undermining the Union by treating Scotland with utter disdain. How much damage are the Prime Minister's Cabinet prepared to do to save his skin?
Yes.
Minister.
Not really a question.
Mr. Speaker, I think that he was offering a yet more general criticism of what's been going on in Downing Street. Let me just remind the House of what's been going on in Downing Street. We've been prioritising the COVID backlogs, Mr. Speaker. Investing massively in 9 million more scans so that people get the treatment that they need and that they've been waiting for, and making sure that we have 44,000 more people in our... He says it's rubbish. They didn't vote for it, Mr. Speaker. They don't support it. 44,000 more people in our NHS now than there were in 2020, Mr. Speaker. And we're fixing social care, Mr. Speaker, which governments have neglected for decades and Labour did absolutely nothing. They have no plan at all to fix the NHS or to fix social care. Vote Labour, wait longer.
We have a new slogan.
Vote Labour, wait longer. It does seem like they've just gone... Can you just come up with a list of all the things that we've done which are good?
Very much. And actually, he's not repeating himself.
He's working his way through.
He's working his way through.
That's why he wants to get his 500,000 people out of work back into work announcement out in the first one. Because each time, I think, we've had a different...
Two or three different sort of things.
Different change of tack. Whether it's, you know, cost of living crisis, getting people back into work. He'd have kept us in lockdown, fastest growing economy. And now 9 million more scans.
Yeah. But Starmer sort of let him do that with a pretty weak question.
It sort of petered out again.
You know, he's not fit for the job. What, you know, what are you going to do about that? Or words to that effect. It's you're supposed to build to a crescendo, and it feels like the real action was earlier.
Well, let's see if Keir Starmer can pick it up one last time. PMQ's unpacked. Question number six.
Keir Starmer!
The reality is that we now have the shameful spectacle of a Prime Minister of the United Kingdom being subject to a police investigation. Unable to leave the country, incapable of doing the right thing, and every day his cabinet failed to speak out, they become more and more complicit. And what's utterly damning, despite the huff and puff, is that this is all happening when petrol prices, the weekly shop and energy bills are going through the roof. 3 months ago, Labour suggested cutting VAT from energy bills. Still, the government has failed to act. Instead of getting on with their jobs, they're wheeled out to save his. Whatever he says in his statement later today or tomorrow won't change the facts. Isn't this a Prime Minister and a government that have shown nothing but contempt for the decency, honesty and respect that define this country?
Prime Minister!
No, Mr. Speaker, we love this country and we're doing everything in our power to help this country. And of course, he wants me out of the way, Mr. Speaker. Of course, he wants me out of the way. He does. And I can't. And many people. Of course, I don't deny it. For all sorts of reasons, many people may want me out of the way. But I tell you, the reason he wants me out of the way is because he knows that this government can be trusted to deliver. And we did. And we delivered on Brexit, Mr. Speaker. He voted 48 times to take this country back into the European Union. We delivered. We delivered the fastest vaccine rollout in Europe, Mr. Speaker, and we will deliver on our plan to unite and level up across the whole of the UK. Crime down 10%, Mr. Speaker. Job vacancies at a record high. Colossal investment in... Yes, Mr. Speaker, we're delivering and they have no plan. Three times as much tech investment as France in this country, twice as much as Germany. We have a vision for this country as the most prosperous and successful economy in Europe because we are going to unite and level up. The problem with the Labour Party today, Mr. Speaker, is that he's a lawyer, not a leader.
I can't hear what the Prime Minister's got to say. No, I would have thought he's the Prime Minister of this side of the House. I'm surprised that this side of the House doesn't want to listen to it, because I do. Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I only wanted to add the point that we've taken the tough decisions We've got the big calls right, and we're, and in particular, I am getting on with the job.
Well, there we are. A lawyer, not a leader.
Yep. Starmer didn't ask a question. He gave a summing up for the prosecution.
Yeah, for the news.
For the news. Yeah. And Boris Johnson gave a summing up for the defence. Now, in a sense, the substance of it doesn't matter that much, but the cacophonous noise on the Tory benches makes me feel like he is actually getting somewhere in terms of rallying his troops.
It cuts both ways, though, doesn't it? Because part of them must be thinking, well, if it wasn't for this blooming party business, we'd be able to be talking about all that, and it's not getting any traction.
That's very true, and there are some people who feel very strongly about that. You were hearing from David Davis earlier, but I think the mood is turning a little into, you know, is this a lot of fuss?
Can we just squeeze through it?
Can we squeeze through it?
I thought it was interesting.
Can we fight on and get back to saying...
Boris Johnson talking about lots of people want me out of the way. Mm. I wondered whether that was as much about the people sitting behind him as the people sitting
opposite.
I was
going to say, Rishi Sunak didn't put his hand up at that point. But, the sad truth, though, is that we've all sat through, you know, half an hour of fun here. And none of that really will matter when Sue Gray publishes her report.
And it does feel a little bit
like... And that will swamp the news and, you know, both of them will be forced to respond, and what will really be all over the evening news if it comes this afternoon is that. But what you do have, you know, is an exchange that allows you to gauge levels of support, and I think...
And actually probably a dress rehearsal for that that statement.
Starmer did reasonably well. He had a decent amount to play with. He made a few good jokes. He made a few good attacks. He summed up his own case effectively. But I think some Tories will look at that and think... Boris Johnson is not going anywhere and he's going to keep fighting. And if that's the case, we might as well get behind him.
Well, that's all we've got time for on today's episode of the Red Box podcast. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast from. And you can listen via the Times Radio app. Catch me Monday to Friday, 10 till 1, live on Times Radio. And if you want to come on and play the hugely popular quiz, Can You Get to Number 10? Email me your details, matt.chorley@times.radio. And we'll get you on very soon.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.